All right, welcome back. Thank you. Grab a seat, grab a seat. How'd you like the morning? Good. Good, good, good. Just starting. Let me just go over a couple bits on this to make sure you understand this, and then we're going to go on to the next section. Just to recap, you came into this world in a human physical body. It has a DNA vibration. It's how you came in. That DNA vibration is half biological and half a part of, influenced by this. This is completely separate, but this influences this as well. So you have that DNA vibration vibrating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that vibration, because it's biological in part, if your parents had certain beliefs, those beliefs are passed on in the DNA to you. This is why bloodlines is, or one of the reasons why bloodlines is very significant. If your parents made a lot of money and their belief was that it's easy to make money, then that passed on to you. And then generally, you just happen to have that belief that money, making money is easy. Making lots of it is no problem. If those beliefs were, you can make as much money as you want, money is a renewable resource, then you just happen to be lucky enough to come in with that vibration, and so making money is easy. Conversely, if the vibration was making money is hard, in order to be rich, you have to grow up on the right side of the tracks. You have to know the right people. Money is the root of all evil. If you had those beliefs coming in, then you had a vibration that coming out of the gate isn't going to be attracting a lot of prosperity or money into your life. And that's the same with relationships. It's the same with health. It's the same with anything and everything. So we kind of have that coming in. The good news is that DNA vibration that does vibrate 24/7 can be changed, and it can be changed by our own thinking. The Jin system of listening to audios every day, reading books every day, going to functions and meetings, ideally, and most importantly, the major functions, the cruise, our spring dream weekend, Go 5-star weekend in the summer, our summer leadership conference for high-level members, our fall family reunion. Going to the major functions is so significant because it helps change our thoughts, help us make decisions, and help us change our beliefs, which in turn starts changing our 24-hour-a-day 7-day-a-week DNA vibration. So DNA vibration is important. You really don't have to think about it or worry about it at all. The only two things you need to really know, other than how it works, or at least a little bit of understanding of how it works, because you don't have to know exactly how it works, but at least a little bit of understanding. The thing that you have to know is, number one, maybe your vibration isn't vibrating what you want. You want prosperity, you want lots of money, you want super health, you want a better relationship. And just maybe that vibration that you kind of came in with, the cards that you were dealt, just don't necessarily, or haven't been in the past, been dialed into that frequency. It hasn't been dialed into those channels that you want. It's been dialed into other channels, giving you other things, or partially responsible for giving you other things. So the first thing is that understanding. And the second thing, which is really the most important, is that if you engage in the system of listening to audios on a regular basis, reading books on a regular basis, going to major functions, participating in giving and receiving recognition, and developing relationships with like-minded people, that your DNA will start changing to match your desires. It will start changing. And that change can happen in some cases in very large leaps over a short period of time, in some cases. And in some cases, that change can happen over time, in slower progressions. But if you engage in the system, then it will change, and for the better. The last thing about that DNA is all the things in our world today, specifically in our world today, wasn't around like this 50 years ago, but we have these devices that we're enamored with, most of us, I guess, and these devices do have a negative effect on that DNA. Even if you don't have a device, if you don't have a laptop, if you don't have a smartphone, if you don't have a cell phone, if you don't have a tablet, if you don't have an iPod, if you don't have a high-definition TV, if you don't have a 3D TV, if you don't have any wireless devices in your home, it doesn't matter, because you're still being bombarded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from the cell phone towers, from the radio towers, from the satellites, whether you have it or not. So you really should consider to do something to kind of potentially neutralize that, or at least be aware of it. So that's the DNA. Next is the brain wiring. The brain wiring is how you're wired. You really can't change this. You can improve in all areas, but generally, you're geared to a certain area. Everyone's different. Could be artistic, could be scientific, could be mathematical. Maybe your brain is geared to learning foreign languages. Somebody else isn't. Maybe your brain is geared to business strategy, or maybe it isn't. So you may have different types of brain wiring. So you have to be aware. Ron Ball talks about this a lot in terms of self-awareness. If you're aware, self-aware of your strength and weaknesses, which is another way of saying if you're aware of your brain wiring, then you're more apt to become successful, because you can then get into areas where you have a natural inclination. You've heard that phrase, natural inclination. That's another way of saying brain wiring. And the question that came up earlier was, how do you know where your brain is wired? It's not hard. If you were one of the, for the guys here, if you played Little League, you either picked it up or you didn't. I mean, you could either just pick up and throw the ball and hit the ball, or you couldn't. You were the kid that they shoved in right field for the last two innings of the game. I guess now everybody plays or something crazy. But back when I grew up, if you were the crummy player, you didn't play because you were crummy. And if you did play, you got right field for the last two innings and you never got a chance to bat because you couldn't hit the ball. Why make you embarrass yourself and so forth when you can't hit? It's not what you're good at. It's like making a guy sing who doesn't have a voice. That doesn't help him. It embarrasses him. He feels like crap because people are laughing at him, and rightly so. These kids can't sing. So how do you know your wiring? You know your wiring. You can figure it out. What are you good at? What are you inclined to like to do? We generally like to do what we're good at. If the kid's good at dribbling basketball, he's on the basketball court 8 hours a day. If he's good on the pool table, he's in the pool room 10 hours a day. If he loves to read and his mind is like that, he's in the library most of the day. Or today on the computer, reading stuff. So we have a good idea of what we're good at. If we make strategy decisions and it keeps going wrong, and they keep being dumb decisions that turn out bad, you're probably not a good strategist. If you play chess or checkers and you always lose, you're probably not a good strategist. You know, so we all have an idea of where we're good at and what we're not. And over time, you'll kind of figure that out. It'll just by osmosis. You'll just decide, and you'll know where you're leaning toward and what you're not. Next is you, who you are as a spiritual being. Your basic vibration is purity, love. It's a high, pure vibration. And all of us have an almost identical vibration of pure love, with just a slight difference because we're all different beings. But that energy is suppressed, and it's covered up with other counter intentions. Our pure energy is a pure intention of love and abundance. Doesn't mean billionaire, it just means abundance. It means all of your needs and wants and desires are covered. And that's different for every person. But the counter intentions that go on include fear, reservation, hold back. The general holdback is always fear. It's fear of pain. It's fear of embarrassment. It's fear of experience of sense of loss, which is emotional pain. It's almost always the same, fear and fear of something, and it always leads to fear of pain, either physical or emotional. That's what it always, all roads lead to Rome on that one. And that stop us from doing things, or hold us back, or hinder us. And in some cases, make us do things we shouldn't do. That's called self-sabotage. So what can you do about this, about releasing your abilities? Number one, just engage in the system. The audios, the books, the functions, the relationships, the giving and receiving of recognition. The more engaged you are, the more of that junk will fall off. Or become irrelevant, because it could be drowned out by other decisions. So that instrument may still be playing, but you don't hear it anymore, because you've got a lot more instruments that are a lot louder drowning it out. You can do a variety of things to clean up that counter intention, and just a small sample of the options are all in level one of the Success Mastery course. High potency homeopathy does that. Best does that, Dr. Mortar. Alpha Biotics does that. Dianetic Scientology and Auditing. Probably the most codified and systematic and workable program over a period of time. It's been really designed specifically to do that one thing. But there's a lot of things out there that work. There's a lot of options out there. Are they needed to become incredibly successful? No. And people say, oh, yes, they are. No, they're not. Yes, you have to. If you don't meditate, you'll never be successful in life. Really? Okay, wait a minute. I know guys who are billionaires. None of them meditate. Do you understand? You don't need to do that if you want to become, you know, mega successful monetarily. It's not a requirement. Will it help you in your life? Probably. Is it a requirement to make money? No. None of these things are required to make money or get what you want. But again, to make you better and happier, that's different, isn't it? See, we have to make sure that one, you don't think that one equates to the other. So the goal here is to help you, show you, number one, how to get what you want in life. But number two, there's a bigger goal, and that is to help you become really fulfilled and happy. Because if I just focus on teaching you how to get what you want in life, you may get what you want and be the most miserable person on the planet and wind up committing suicide. I mean, my friend Rene Rifkin did that in Australia. He was amazing at getting what he wanted in terms of money. He had mansions, he had 60 luxury cars, you know, Rolls Royces, Ferraris, and so forth. Had the largest yacht in Sydney Harbor, helicopter on it. Had a hunting lodge. We used to take the helicopter from the yacht and scoot up 20 minutes to the hunting lodge. And he would fly in a snooker champion. We had a snooker table there. We'd play snooker, have lunch, hop back on the helicopter, go back to the yacht, you know, have world-famous chefs flown in to cook for us. I mean, it was opulent in terms of the lifestyle. He wound up killing himself, committed suicide. So he was good at getting what he wanted, but not necessarily good at really having a balanced, fulfilled life. So there's a little more to it than just making money. Well, there's a lot more to it than just making money. But there's a lot more to it than just getting what you want as well. So you have to be aware that inside you there is purity, there is goodness, there is greatness. It's just waiting to be released. Just the understanding of that concept can change your life. Just the knowledge of that, just focusing on that, will cause some of those counter-intentions to fall off. That you are full of greatness and goodness, purity and completeness. It's who you are, it's who we all are. And it's just really there, it's been there all along, and it just needs to be released. You don't have to add anything, it's just releasing it. You have everything you need. And then lastly, the brain broadcasting. The brain broadcasting is your ability to broadcast a frequency based on what you want or what you want to manifest or what you want to have in your reality. Focus on it and then create it in the real physical universe. Another way of saying that is basically whatever you want, you can get. And that's what broadcasting is. Broadcasting puts out the frequencies that create what's in your reality. If your broadcasting is something you want and it's counter, the vibration you're putting out is counter to your DNA vibration or your you vibration, that broadcast has to be way, way louder to counteract the other vibrations. If your broadcast is congruent with your vibrations, then you'll get it very fast. Now, first, before you ask questions, you don't have to understand this 100%. You just have to have a general, vague understanding, yes. Question is, do you come into this world with pre-existing junk here? The answer is, yeah, you do. And we all have different ones. So we come in with this, that's the hand we're dealt, and this is the hand we're dealt in effect. Yes. Good question. The question is, you know, I'm obviously feeling a little off right now. I get a little bit of a fever, and I'm dealing with something in my stomach. The question was, if we all broadcast something to me, would that help? When you broadcast to another person, it affects their thoughts. And only my thoughts can affect my physiology. So it certainly can help in that way, but it's not going to affect my physiology. It can help my thoughts. So if you do want to throw out any positive vibes, I certainly would appreciate it. Absolutely. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, it's a very good point. I mentioned that there are some things like crystals and others that can actually amplify your vibration. And the challenge is, if your vibration is not really good, you don't really want it amplified. I remember I was on the Joe Franklin show. I was on the Joe Franklin show in New York. You remember the Joe Franklin show, right? Yeah. I was on the Joe Franklin show in New York 20 years ago with Bill Cosby. And Bill Cosby and I were chatting, and you know, he's a very clean comedian. He doesn't curse or swear. And back in the 80s, you know, cocaine was like the big hip thing to do. And we were chatting in the green room, and he says, "I don't understand why all these young people are doing cocaine." Well, I was a lot younger than him, and I was familiar with that world. And I says, "Well, cocaine, the reason people do it is it amplifies your personality." And he says, "But what if you're an asshole?" That was the worst thing I ever heard come out of Bill Cosby's mouth. We had a big chuckle. But yeah, so the answer is some of these things can amplify, but they can amplify your DNA, they can amplify your spirit vibration. They also can potentially amplify your ability to broadcast. So again, that's why, you know, some of us have seen people who have crystals all over their house and they're flat broke. It's like, how come what are they doing? Nothing. Or the person's dying of cancer or something and they get crystals everywhere. Well, what's going on? Well, that's what's going on. It's actually having a negative effect because it's amplifying their negativity and making it worse. So you have to be really careful with some of these things. Not all just, you know, what you read about from the guy selling it, you know, right? The guy selling the crystal wants you to buy the crystal and all he's going to tell you is good stuff. And I'm not saying anything bad about crystals. I have crystals in my house and you know, it's a wonderful thing. In an environment, they actually create a wonderful healing environment. But when you go into that, again, it can help amplify where you're at. Yes? Yeah, the question is brain broadcasting the mind or the physical brain? It actually is the physical brain controlled by you. So it's the physical organ there. Yes. Good question. The question was, if you're plugged into the system, so you're reading books every day, you're listening to audios every day, you're going to as many functions as you can, developing relationships with positive, enthusiastic people, you're engaging in giving and receiving recognition, and you're a member of the AIM program, the Steve Lewis AIM program, and you're a member of Vital Balancing, and you're going to the best practitioners, and you're going to, you're using I Ching systems from Mary Miller, and you're having Lee Beamer working you, and all these different things. Is that going to help you accelerate? Yeah. Yeah, it should help you accelerate for sure. They're not needed, but it can help you accelerate. Absolutely. That's why they're there. They're aids, they're tools. Because keep in mind, we generally have been dealt a different hand than the privileged elite. They have an advantage. They have a head start. They have a big advantage. So in order to catch up, we can still do it without any of these tools. It's just a little harder. I mean, that's the reality. People don't want to talk about realities here, but that's the reality of it. So it takes us a little bit more work, a little bit harder, but once we get it, guess what? When if you're young enough and you haven't had children yet, when you have children, then it perpetuates because you're then the start of that person. Where does the mind fit in? The mind is actually a part they're attached to, but separate from the spirit. And in this example, I'm just not talking about at this point because it's basically the controller of the physical body or controller of the brain, which controls the physical body. It's really the conduit between you and the physical body. Yes? Does Mary Miller I Ching, does BEST, Bioenergetic Synchronization Technique from Mortar, does Lee Beamer, what are they working on? They're actually working on the field, which is not even up there. It's the conduit between you and the physical body. So it's working in that area, which is multi-layered. Yes. So the question is, where physically are you, the spiritual being? Spiritual being, you're in your body and outside your body, and you can move in and out. And there's different planes here, so it's a little different than thinking in two dimension. So there can be many things in the same space. Correct. That's why there's time and space, and that's even an Einstein theory, which went beyond E mc squared. which really doesn't prove that there's no difference between time and space. But the researchers now in Switzerland at the Super Collider have, and this is the second time, that they found particles moving faster than the speed of light, which they've done. This is the second time in 10 years. And it's still controversial because that being true, then EMC squared is not true. That is a theory. That's why they always call it the theory of relativity, not the fact of relativity. It has been a theory. And this new data, this new factual data, scientifically verified factual data, no longer theory, shows that that theory of relativity isn't true, which then makes true that there is no difference between space and time, which is very significant. And half of you, or 99% of you, don't understand any of that, and you don't have to. The only thing that you have to understand is you have the ability and power to control your own destiny and make whatever you happen, whatever you want to happen in your life happen. That's the only thing you need to know. Okay, just like driving a car, you don't need to know how it works. You don't need to know how electricity works.
Kevin, you said overpowered.
Correct, it'll overpower it. If your broadcast of what you want is not just intense enough, but virtually what we call pure enough. In other words, it's going into a non-filtered environment, which I'm going to show you how to do. Which is, again, 5 minutes to learn, but it'll take a lifetime for you to master how to do that. You know, and we're never perfect, and we go, just like anybody in life, you go through streaks where you're really, really good at for a while, and you kind of, you know, you're off for a while where you're going through a learning process. And that's what it's all about. Correct. If you're not that intense with your broadcasting, but it is congruent with who you are, you, and your DNA, then it's in alignment, and you have no resistance. There's no counterintention. And then when there's no resistance, it happens very, very quickly. And I'll give you an example of this. I was down in Los Angeles. I was at Shutters. I had some meetings, and I was going over Dan Acker's house for dinner. And I was running late, and I had a phone appointment with Lee Beamer. And it's an hour appointment. And I'm thinking, there's no way I can do the appointment and get to Dan's house on time. So I was sitting there, and I'm thinking, you know, I need to reschedule this. I have to call Lee and tell him I can't make it, and I need to reschedule it, maybe tomorrow. And I really need to call him. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, I need to reschedule this. I really need to reschedule this. That's what I want. Phone rings. Hi, it's Don from Lee Beamer's office. Lee's running an hour and a half late. He's wondering if he can reschedule the appointment for tomorrow. So let me think about it. It's a big hassle, but I'll do it for Lee. No, I'm kidding. I told him it was fine right away. But the point is, that's what I'm talking about. That's a simple, goofy example, but it's exactly how it works in real life when that intention is right there. Yeah. It's a very good question. Let me define greed, because we use this word a lot in a negative context, and it's not necessarily negative. And I'm not Gordon Gekko going to say greed is good. But it depends on how you define greed. If greed is simply wanting more, wanting more, wanting more, wanting more, wanting more, wanting more, there's nothing wrong with that. When it becomes bad, when it's you want more, 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 at the expense of anything else. See the difference? I'm willing to crush people. I'm willing to lie, cheat, steal. I'm willing to lose my family, lose my health, because I want more. Now that's a bad situation. So wanting things is perfectly fine, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But wanting things while at the same time willing to crush other people or destroy your own health or something like that will still lead you to get the things you want. And those people will be just fine, because that's how it works. And your family will be fine in time, and you don't have an effect on those people. They're making their own reality. That's a cooperative effort. They have choices as well, so you can't blame yourself. But if it just, you know, when it destroys your happiness and your health, then, you know, What have you got? I mean, that's a scriptural principle. You know, what's the value of gaining the whole world and losing your soul, right? It's like you're miserable. Yes. Yeah, fear is a major counterintention, primarily not, it could be in the DNA, and it certainly can be here. It's never in brain wiring. You're not wired for fear. You're just wired for different things that you do well. It definitely can be here. Going through the system is going to start eliminating that, because everything we do in the system, the books, the audios, and so forth, help to slowly eliminate and reduce fear. Because fear, you know, I think Zig Ziglar was the first guy who said this. Fear is false evidence appearing real. And of course, FDR said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. So fear really is false evidence appearing real. When you turn lights on, you eliminate darkness. When you start seeing more things, it's like when we were kids, I'm afraid of the dark. Okay, let me turn the light on. Are you afraid now? No. Why? Because I can see there's no, you know, booger man there. Everything's fine. So that's really what fear is. It's fear of what you don't know. And as you start going through and reading books, seeing other people on stage, tell success stories, listening to audios, meeting with other people, finding out they're just like you, all of a sudden, the false evidence that appears real begins to fade away. You begin to see the great Oz behind the curtain. Think of the great Oz, that's fear. Oh, the great Oz, oh, the great Oz, oh, Oz. Wait a minute, who's that guy behind the curtain over there? You mean that is the guy I was just scared of? All of a sudden, you're no longer fearful. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I am the great Oz, look at me. And that's really what the system does, is it pulls back the curtain of the great Oz and begins to show you that there's nothing to be afraid of. And that's a process over time. Secondly, when you get motivated to do something in life and find out that it's okay to fail, you get less fear as well. Because it's like, wait a minute, like riding the bike, I'm so afraid. You're on the bike for the first time with the training wheels, right? First you had your tricycle, then you had your two-wheeler with training wheels. And you are afraid of taking those training wheels off. You have fear. You have fear of falling. Why? Because falling doesn't look like a pleasant experience. I'm afraid of the potential pain. I have fear. I don't know why, but I'm afraid of falling. I'm afraid of falling off the bike. I'm afraid of pain. I'm afraid of crying. I'm afraid of the pain. So they take the training wheels off, and you fall. And you cry. But all of a sudden, you go, why am I crying? And it's not that bad. And you get back on the bike. And you fall again. But this time, you laugh. Kid laughs when he falls second and third time. Doesn't cry anymore. He laughs. I fell down. No helmet. We don't have helmets. There's a bone sticking out of your leg. I get to wear a cast. So we begin to eliminate that fear. And that's how the system begins to get rid of that fear as well. Okay, now, with a basic understanding of this, and keep in mind you do not have to, nor will you, be perfect on understanding this. It's just physically impossible. Now the question is, how do you make what you want happen? I'm going to give you the steps. Step one seems simple, but it isn't. Step one is know what you want. If you look at how we defined what we want for Jin, some things were very specific. Correct? We said we want, Jin will have 10,000 members sometime. So the definition of what we wanted was very specific. We want 10,000 members. So what you want can be specific. Next, if you notice how we define what we want for Jin, Some of the wants were general. November is going to be the best month. What's best month? We're going to have 10,000 members very soon. What's very soon? See how that's general? So the next thing you can do is define what you want in general terms. And I'll give you an example of real life. And again, some of these examples are easier and very simple. An automobile, you can say, I want a Porsche 911, red, tan interior, 18-inch wheels, Pirelli low-profile tires, turbo, cabriolet convertible. I mean, you can be very specific, right, with that car. So it can be a specific want. Or you can have a general want. I want a car, a luxury car, a gorgeous luxury car. Yes, that's what I want. I want a gorgeous luxury car. What kind? I don't know. I want a gorgeous luxury car. Two-door, four-door. I don't care. I want a very expensive, gorgeous luxury car. So you can, what color? I don't care. So you can be general. You can be very general. You may get a 1956 Lincoln Town Car convertible. That's a gorgeous luxury car that's very expensive. You didn't say new. It's a classic. Doesn't drive very well. You didn't say you want something that drives really good. You can be general. And you can be surprised at what you get. There's nothing wrong with that. So you can be general. Or when you know what you want, you can nail it down to a feeling. There's no right or wrongs with either one of these three methods. They will be appropriate from time to time based on the situation. What does a feeling mean? What a feeling means is, let me give you an example. Guy says he wants a Porsche 911 Turbo, red, tan interior, gives me the whole shopping list. And I say to my friend, true story, I said, why do you want that Porsche? I've always wanted a Porsche. It's been my dream since I was a kid. Why? Well, I love the way they look. Well, when you drive it, you can't see what it looks like. Well, I can look at it in the garage, I guess. Is that what you're going to do? You're not going to drive it? You're just going to stare at it? No, I want to drive it. Oh, well, why do you want to drive a Porsche 911 Turbo? Because I always wanted one since I was a kid. No, I get that, but why do you want one now? Well, I want to show off to all those idiots who told me I was a loser. That's why. I want to drive by them every day. All right, you want to know? That's why. It's going to make me feel like I'm somebody. That's why. I said, oh, so you don't care about a Porsche 911 Turbo. You want to feel special. You want to feel like a somebody. Isn't that what you really want? He looked at me and said, he thought for a moment, yeah, that's what I really want. Well, you could certainly put that Porsche 911 Turbo out there. I'm not saying don't. But you could also let the universe maybe give you something even better and put out what you really want, which is to feel like a somebody. It's a true story. He then was convinced by the Republican National Committee to run for Congress. And he ran for Congress. And he lost. And everyone in the Republican Party told him what a magnificent person he was. He's invited to speak everywhere, and not just his district, but around, even though he didn't win. He has so much respect for the campaign that he ran, even though he lost, and the issues that he put out, and the way he articulated those issues. Never running before, and he didn't lose by much. And he has a huge potential to get into politics and maybe win an election because he's running again. And he called me up and he says, he just called me up recently. He's a friend of Ed Foreman's and myself. And he called me up and he says, KT, I'm not driving a Porsche 911. He says, but I feel like a somebody. He says, I got what I wanted. And it was better than I could ever imagine. I never thought about getting into politics or speaking in front of people and talking about issues that people had on their mind and taking a leadership role and changing my district and politics, having a lead role in changing how government works for the betterment of the people that I would potentially represent. He goes, man, life couldn't be better. And I never would have had this if I was driving a Porsche 911. So thinking about or knowing what you want in a feeling sense can be very, very effective. So the first thing is you have to know what you want. Any questions on knowing what you want? It is pretty straightforward, generally speaking. Now, the good thing about an Inner Circle member is every month when we get on that call, for those who are existing Inner Circle members, sometimes we just don't get right into it. Sometimes I give you a little bit of explanation of why we're doing it this way, so you do get the ongoing training there, and it's pretty helpful. Okay, so know what you want. Next is know why you want it. Now, these are two separate things, but they're really the same, because if you know what you want and why you want it, it's almost always going to come down to some feeling. It's still perfectly okay to want that 911 Porsche, but you got to know why you want it. Now, here's an example. I have a watch on, which is different from the watch I had on this morning. And this is a Vacheron Constantin watch. It's similar in status and cost to a Patek Philippe. They are kind of competitors. Patek Philippe is a little bit more expensive of a watch. My friend in New York had a Patek Philippe. And it was a thin watch with a black band. And it was what I call understated elegance, because it's a watch that cost $150,000 that looked like a watch that could cost $25. It was a nice looking watch, but there was no diamonds. It was just a nice looking watch, a Patek Philippe. And he had this Patek Philippe, and I said, Joe, why do you have a Patek Philippe? You don't spend money on anything. You're like cheap. You're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But you know, I'm in your house. You don't have a painting on the wall. It looks like a college dormitory here. He said, I'm not going to waste money on paintings on the wall. Who am I trying to impress? You? You know? Since you come over all the time, you know that there's nothing on the wall. I said, but why do you got a Patek Philippe watch? And he said, because there's a lot of people I do meet who don't know me or my background. They know what a Patek Philippe watch is. The average guy doesn't, so I'm not trying to impress him. But if I'm going into a meeting in Geneva or New York or Palm Beach or Aspen and I'm meeting some people and they don't happen to know me, when they see a $150,000 Patek Philippe watch that looks like a watch that could cost $25, they're impressed. And they're impressed with the fact that I'm not trying to impress anybody. Do you understand? He goes, that's why I wear it. It's a business decision. So I said, okay, that's fine. He said, the second reason is you can sell a Patek Philippe watch 20 years from now for what you paid or more. So it's usually not a depreciating asset. It's usually an appreciating asset, or at least holds its own. It's liquid. You're liquid because you can sell that in a nanosecond. I mean, even if you get 50 cents on the dollar, at least you have cash in a nanosecond. You know, it's liquid. You got something that's liquid. It's an asset. It's like buying fine art. It's an asset. It doesn't depreciate. Wealthy people always buy appreciating assets, by the way. Broke people always buy depreciating assets. They take the majority of their money and they buy Xboxes or Wiis or game, I don't know what they spend money on, but they spend money on stuff that loses value the moment it walks out the door. Wealthy people spend money on things that go up in value when it walks out the door. There's a huge difference there. Huge difference. And whether it's clothes, wealthy people will spend, okay, this suit. This is, now, you don't have to say yes or no. I think it's a good-looking suit. Okay? I think it's a good-looking suit. Okay? Now, you know, I got it when I was a little heavier, so it's a little long. It's a little loose, but it's a good-looking suit. Fine. I've had this suit for 25 years. I wear this suit a lot. It's one of a dozen suits that I own. And I bought them all 25 years ago. They're Brioni suits. At the time, I paid $3,500. But it's a suit that lasts forever. I never send it to the dry cleaners, ever. It ruins the suit. I just hang it up. It's a good suit. The wrinkles come out in a day. That's what happens with a good suit. The shirt, nice looking shirt. It's a Stefano Ricci shirt. It costs $650. I bought a lot of these shirts 25 years ago when I bought the suits. They look like brand new. They last a long time. So the point is, when I was talking to my friend Joe, he had this Patek Philippe. And I said to myself, I want a nice, classy watch. I don't wear watches generally anyway. I usually don't wear any jewelry. Almost never wear any jewelry in real life, I say. But I wanted a nice, classy watch. And so I didn't know if I wanted the Patek or a Vacheron. Both are top watches from Switzerland. And I knew why I wanted that watch. I wanted that watch as a business tool that I could use strictly in business situations, or if I was going out to a classy restaurant where I didn't want to wear some big, gaudy, you know, diamond-encrusted Rolex, that's a tool as well. So I wanted this watch. And I went and I tried. This is before Google and the internet, by the way. So I kept going in store after store after store looking for Patek Philippe's or Vacherons, and I could never find one I really liked. But that's what I wanted. I'm in Beverly Hills. This was probably 12 years ago. I'm in Beverly Hills. I have a meeting. The meeting cancels. I'm staying at the Regent Beverly Wilshire, which is the Pretty Woman Hotel at the end of Rodeo Drive and Wilshire Boulevard. My meeting cancels. I got a couple hours to kill. And I always have books with me to read, so I never, you know, have to kill any time. But I was right there in Beverly Hills, and I was not thinking about my watch. I was thinking about a nice restaurant that I happen to know is on Cannon, which is right next to Rodeo Drive, that makes great homemade pasta. And I thought, perfect, my meeting's canceled. I'm going to go now have a nice lunch. I'll bring a book with me. I'll sit by myself. I'll eat. I'll read. It'll be wonderful. As I was walking down the street on a beautiful day, I see a jewelry store, a pawn shop, actually. And I look in the window, and I see this watch. And it looked brand new in the box. And I go in, and I said, what's the story behind that watch? He said, we just got that an hour ago. It's brand new in the box. I go, what happened? Some woman bought it for her fiancé. She's no longer her fiancé. She came in, F him, blah, 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 blah. Give me the money, because she bought it with his credit card, so any money that she got was going right to her. I said, fine, well, you know, what's the retail on it? He told me. I said, what can I buy it for? He told me, we negotiated and I bought the watch. So I bought the watch. But that's how things happen in real life. The key here is you have to know why you want something. Because when you understand the reason why you want something, when you think about what you want and you know why you want it, you won't feel bad by not having it. When you understand the reason why you want something, when you think about it, you won't feel bad for not having it, which means you're not focusing on the lack. So just ask yourself, why do I want this? Now, you could say, I want a bigger house. Why? Because we got too many kids and too many dogs, and we want more room. Reasonable, right? Why do you want more room? Because having more room will make me feel, you with me? It almost always comes down to a feeling. If you just keep asking why you want it, they then say, well, why do you want that? Why is that important? Why is that important? Why is that important? It always comes down to a feeling. Why do you want a new car? Because my car is old. I want a new one. I'm tired of an old car. I want a new car. Why do you want a new car? Because I want a new car. I'm tired of an old car. But why a new car? Why not just a different car? Because I don't want an old car. Why not? Why do you want a new car? Because an old car breaks down all the time. So why do you want the new car? So it won't break down. And why is that important? Because I'll feel more secure. Thank you. You with me? Do you see how that process goes? That's the process. You have to do it yourself. You just keep asking why. And when you do this, this is a mental process that has multiple benefits. It blows out things that are keyed in. It blows out stuff that's surrounding the you, all these postulates, because it pulls back the curtain of the great Oz. It sheds light on what the real issue is. And if you just simply shed light on what the real issue is, you can now confront the real issue mentally, and then you can shove it aside. Or it just automatically dissipates, or it falls away, because now you get it. And in a new unit of time, you have a new cognition, a new realization, a new understanding. And you think, well, that was a dopey need that I had, but I understand I made it years ago, but I don't have that same belief today. And boy, that belief has been holding me back or making me do things or stopping me from doing things. Any questions on that? Yes. Yeah, you'll know when you hit the why, generally when you're at a feeling and you have an aha moment. You'll have a cognition. And so you're running a process on yourself. And it's incredibly fantastic because when you want things, you have to know why you want them. And when you do this, all of a sudden, in some cases, you're not going to want it anymore. Because you understand that the reason why you wanted it was a stupid reason. By the way, do you ever want something like a toy or something when you were a kid really, really, really bad? I mean, really, but you had to have it. Please, God, Santa Claus, if I just get this, I promise you I will do anything you want. I just want this, just one time, just once, this. I'll never ask for anything ever again. You can give all my presents in the future to the poor, but just this year, give me this. I want this, please. I want the game Risk. I need the game Risk, please. You open up, there it is. Risk, a game of skill and strategy. And you open it up and you read the book and you think, this is a long book to read. Didn't know it was this long. And you kind of read it. And a bunch of people get together and you start playing it, but you don't even know all the rules yet. But you're so excited about getting Risk. And an hour later, Risk is in the box. And you never play with Risk ever again. You didn't really want it after all. That happens. So we can actually eliminate a lot of our frivolous wants, needs, and desires when we do this process, which allows us to focus on what we really want in life and also frees us up from having a feeling of lack. Because when we go through all the things we want, we really realize, you know, we don't necessarily have a huge list of crazy wants, needs, and desires. Nothing wrong with wanting more, but all of a sudden there's no feeling of lack. And when you want something, it becomes a different sense. It becomes excitement because you become happier where you are right now, which is the whole thing we've talked about in levels 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5. Be happy where you are right now when you want something. Be thrilled where you're at. Don't feel like you'll be happier if you get it. Do you understand? You can't feel like you'll be happier when you get what you want. You're happy right now. You're happy right now. That is the key. Being happy right now when you put out a desire for what you want. And when you think of what you want, you're not feeling the lack of it or feeling, when I get it, then I'll be happy. No. I'm happy right now. And when I get it, I'll be the same as I am right now. Happy. Feeling good. It's not going to be more happy. It's not I'm going to be miserable until I get it. Then you'll never get it. So this exercise or drill is very significant. Any questions on this? Yes. In the How to Get Started Fast series, people are listening to that because they want to build an affiliate program. So the instructions are very specific. So I only have a certain amount of time there. So when you're building an affiliate program, you make a certain amount of money each month. So the simplest way to fixate on a goal is just fixate on a dollar amount. And that sweet spot that we're looking for there is a dollar amount big enough to get you excited, but small enough that you actually believe you can hit it. And I'm just looking for that sweet spot. Because at that point, you know, that person may not even be a member. They have, you know, they could be just an affiliate. So maybe they've gone through Your Wish Is Your Command, or maybe not. So they're at a limited space, so I have to keep it incredibly simplified at that point. Any other questions on know what you want and know why you want it? Yes. Question is, okay, I want money. So the question is, do I think of a dollar amount or certain stocks in my portfolio going up at a certain price? Good question. And I'll give you the answer. The answer is you can do both. You can do one or the other, or you can do both. However, when it comes to money, I will give you a suggestion, and this is good for everybody. When it comes to money, we think we have figured out where our money's going to come from. And I can attest to you from experience and assure you that where you think your money's going to come from is probably not where a lot of your money is going to come from. You may get a lot of money from the venture you're in, what you're focusing on, and that's fine. But why limit it to that? If you just focus on an amount of money, maybe all your stocks go right down the toilet, but some other venture comes in and you make twice as much. Do you care? No. I knew you were going to say no. It doesn't matter where the money comes from, right? So if you want money, focus on a certain dollar amount. And that's very clearly defined in the Law of Success in 16 Lessons and Think and Grow Rich. It's always a specific dollar amount, not the method you think it's gonna happen. So when it's money specifically. Okay. So know what you want, know why you want it. Next. If you want to send out a broadcast to get what you want, you need to know what you want. You can be specific, general, or have a feeling, but you must know why you want it. Once you've done that, then you have to ideally prepare your mind. Let me explain this. Preparing your mind means clear your mind. Now, I'm using the word mind here, not brain. The mind is where you see pictures. If I say, for example, think of a cat. Everyone right now, think of a cat. Think of a cat. A cat. A cat. How many people here, by a show of hands, got a picture in their mind of a cat? Okay. Was that picture of the cat in your brain or your mind? It won't fit in your brain. The cat can't be in your brain. Okay, there's no cats in anybody's brains here. Okay. But the picture of the cat was in your mind, which is not physically part of the brain. It's a separate entity with mass, but it's not part of the brain. This is how mind readers work. They're actually seeing the pictures in your mind because they're all open right there. So I can actually see them. So if you're telling me a story and the pictures are one thing and you're telling me something else, I know you're not telling me the truth. I remember one person was doing, actually L. Ron Hubbard was doing an auditing session. It was on one of the audios. And this is before they had what's called an e-meter and things, so they couldn't really see where the energy was. So he's asking this person a question about an incident that happened earlier in their life. And the person is not under hypnosis or anything, they're just recalling it by memory. And so he said, okay, recall it from start to finish. And so the person does, he goes, do it again. And the person does, but this time more detail comes out. He goes, okay, start at the beginning and tell me again. And this time even more detail comes out. It's like, oh yeah, and there was an apple pie on the windowsill. And then he told it again. And the third time, more detail comes out. Oh, and I remember now the drapes, they were actually white, like with doilies on them. I remember that specifically. Okay, tell me again. And this went on and on and on. And every time there was a little more detail. But the particular problem this person had was none of the things that he was describing was fixing the problem. So finally, Hubbard, who could see the picture, said, well, tell me about the dog. And he goes, oh, yeah, there was a dog there. It was kind of like, look, we're not going to be here all night. Let me just help you. All right, tell me about the dog. Oh, yeah, the dog. And then he went on, and because he could see the pictures. So the mind is where your pictures are. So preparing your mind means clear your mind. Now this is where it gets interesting. If you've seen movies like The Da Vinci Code or different movies where rituals go on, and in these rituals, whether it's a movie based on fact or fiction, in these rituals, two things happen a lot in rituals. One, there's some sex act, like in The Da Vinci Code, I think it was, or one of those movies by Dan Brown, there was some sex act that was being involved. There was some ritual going on which involved a sex act, a man and a woman having intercourse. And in some rituals, there's a killing of some animal. And actually, this is not, you know, fantasy. In the Jewish tradition, in the temple, the priest would kill animals and drain the blood, and it's all outlined in that tradition. There was always a killing of some animal. So generally, there's either some killing of a real physical animal in these rituals or some act of sexuality. And why would that be historically true at these high-level secret societies or even religions like the Jewish religion? Why would that be true? Here's the answer. The answer is when you clear your mind and you're at a place where there's complete stillness in your mind and complete quiet, and you actually have a moment where you're in total 100% bliss. You're at bliss at the moment you're at right now. Total bliss. Everything else is gone. You have complete clarity. And at that point, you can put out a broadcast that is so pure. There's nothing holding it back. There's no interference. None whatsoever. This is why throughout history, and I'm not saying that I'm going to give you some instructions on how to do rituals, including sex acts or killing of animals. I'm giving you a history lesson. That's not what we do here. But I'm giving you a history lesson. The history lesson is this is why they're being used. So in a sex act, when a man and a woman are involved and engage in intercourse and there is an orgasm, at that moment of orgasm, everything else in your thought process is gone. There's nothing else you're thinking about. Zero. You're in absolutely present time, and you're in one of the most blissful states for that moment, at that point. Everything else becomes like irrelevant and gone, and nothing else matters. Everything else is quiet. Your mind actually becomes open and quiet. And at that moment, you become completely open to seeing anything off your radar screen. Like everything just opens up. It's like, it's all there now. And not can you just see it, but you can feel and sense what's off your radar screen at that moment. And you can feel and sense complete stillness. And what I mean by that is there is no other thoughts. You are completely open. It's like your spiritual essence actually is purely released for that nanosecond with no junk. And then it goes right back in. So there's a window there where you can actually put something out. There are other things that attempt to do similar. In transcendental meditation, you have city meditation, where you get to a certain point where you get into that spot via meditation. There are other techniques or other traditions that do similar. At the same time, when there is death or killing of a life, you can get into that same point. Because when you see a living, breathing mammal, not a fish, a mammal, and it's right there looking at you in the eyes, and you kill it, there is a sense that is unlike any sensation you could ever feel. And I'm not suggesting that you go out there and kill any animal to try this out. I'm not suggesting that. I'm giving you a history lesson. But this is why these traditions have been used. And this is why it went to the extreme in various cultures. The Mayans, various cultures, killed humans, human sacrifice. That's why it went to that extreme. So, preparing your mind and clearing your mind, you don't have to go to those, what we call extremes. But you have to kind of be aware of what you're attempting to do here. By preparing your mind, basically what you're trying to do is you want to bring emotion into the picture. I'm going to show you exactly how to do this. Which generally should include pleasure or pain. And why am I going to include pain here? Because you have lots of opportunities in your life when things don't go the way you think they should, where you will experience emotional pain. Just imagine that a loved one that you love, maybe a brother, a sister, or an aunt or uncle, right now, this weekend, right here, this moment, when we break, you check your cell phone, there's a message. And the message says, I have terrible news. So-and-so was just murdered. An intruder came into the house and killed him or her. How would you feel? You'd have a horrible emotion, a very painful emotion, and rightly so. At that moment of pain, there's a window that has opened up, and you have an amazing opportunity to change your world. Because that is an opportunity. This is called Phoenix rising from ashes. It doesn't mean the pain's going to go away. It isn't. But you have a chance to plant a seed into the universe that made things better than you could ever imagine. This is why some people say he takes lemons and makes lemonade. No matter what happens bad, you can turn it into a major advantage. Let me give you an example. Some of you know that I have a $37 million fine imposed on me by the lunatic judge in Chicago. I appealed the ruling, and the appeals court vacated the $37 million fine and said that the judge was loony. He didn't have any evidence in the record to support it, and he has to redo this, get more evidence, and come up with something that's rational and reasonable. The judge didn't get any more evidence. He got zero additional evidence. He just basically rewrote the same order and sent it back to the appeals court. Well, obviously, I'm going to get that overturned because it was the same thing he did the first time. He didn't follow the appeals court instructions. Not one instruction was followed. I'm obviously going to get this thing overturned. Well, the ruling just came back, and it was affirmed. They didn't overturn it at all. They waited a year and a half, which was amazing, and they wrote a small little 12-page opinion, and they affirmed this. Now, this, for anybody, would probably be terrible or bad news. And I was actually with some friends, some very wealthy friends, when I got the phone call and I got the news. And when I got the news, it certainly wasn't news that I was expecting. It wasn't what I was putting out there. It was the exact opposite. So I was, for a nanosecond, a little bit shocked. Like, huh? Like somebody slapped me in the face. Like, huh? What are you talking about? A little shell-shocked. And I immediately took advantage of that moment to put out my right intention, to put out my broadcast. Make a long story short, this just happened recently. I've already gotten calls now from various organizations who are going to be writing amicus briefs, which are what's called briefs that are friends of the court. And we're going to appeal it now to the entire Seventh Circuit, which means every judge on the Seventh Circuit is going to be hearing my story. Now, that's significant because as this continues to go forward, every judge now, every one of them is going to know the story. If they don't take the case, or if they affirm it again, then I have a very good chance of going to the Supreme Court. Why is that good? Because if I'm one of the one out of 500 cases that gets accepted by the Supreme Court, this will become national and worldwide news. And the amount of publicity that I will get, win, lose, or draw, doesn't matter. You couldn't buy that kind of worldwide publicity. So you can't lose. The point is you can't lose. You can't ever lose.